So, there I was, freshly minted as a substitute teacher and nervous as all hell about my first day at the local high school. I had this whole plan laid out, with notes and lesson plans, ready to take on any challenge. But honestly, nothing could have prepared me for what that day had in store. Lunchtime finally rolled around, and I was beyond grateful. Teaching isn't easy, especially when you're new and trying to make a good first impression. I decided to step out of the classroom and head to the teacher's lounge. Figured I could use a few moments to gather my thoughts, maybe munch on that sandwich I packed. Now, the layout of the school is kind of a maze. I remember wandering around for a bit, looking for the lounge. At one point, I took a wrong turn and ended up in this old part of the building that looked like it hadn't been used in years. It was kind of creepy, to be honest, with paint peeling off the walls and old-fashioned, discolored tiles on the floor. I eventually found my way to the lounge and was just about to take a bite of my sandwich when the overhead speakers crackled to life. I remember it was the principal's voice, but she sounded a little shaken. She told us there was a potential threat in the building and we needed to initiate lockdown procedures immediately. My heart started pounding in my chest. I'd heard about lockdown drills, but I wasn't sure if this was a drill or the real deal. Nobody really elaborated. There was a hushed urgency in the lounge. Experienced teachers quickly moved, turning off lights and locking doors. And then, as if on cue, the school siren began to blare, a sharp contrast to the almost eerie quietness that had fallen over the room. I can't really remember the details, but I think one of the older teachers suggested I should head to a classroom. I didn't want to be alone, but the idea of being stuck in the lounge with no way out didn't appeal to me either. I thought about the students, hoping they were safe. I left the lounge and tried to find my way back to the classroom I was teaching in. But with the alarms blaring and the hallways darkened to deter any threats, it was really hard to see where I was going. At one point, I thought I heard someone walking, maybe even running, down one of the corridors. Now, I'm not one to jump to conclusions, but my mind started racing. I wondered if it was the police or if it was a student trying to find safety. I even questioned if it could have been the potential threat the principal had talked about. My stomach felt like it was in knots. With all the adrenaline pumping, I just knew I needed to find a place to hide, and fast. I remember ducking into what looked like a janitor's closet, hoping I wouldn't be discovered. Once inside the closet, I closed the door as silently as I could and pressed my back against it, trying to steady my breath. It was close quarters, surrounded by brooms and cleaning supplies, with a faint smell of bleach. It wasn't the best hiding spot, but it was all I had at the moment. In the distance, I could still hear the sirens wailing, a constant reminder of the danger that loomed. But over the noise, there was something else. It was hard to distinguish at first, but as I strained my ears, I realized I was hearing a man's voice, shouting incoherently, and it was getting louder. He was getting closer. Panic surged through me. My mind tried to grapple with the thought of someone with a weapon in the school. In that moment, I wish I knew what he wanted or even what he was saying. I tried to understand his shouts, but it all came out as a garbled mess to me. Then I felt it, a buzzing in my pocket. My cell phone was vibrating, and to my horror, it started to ring. I scrambled to silence it, but the damage was done. The closet wasn't soundproof and the ringtone was unmistakably loud. For a moment, there was silence. No more shouting. I had this sinking feeling in my stomach. The man had heard my phone. I could sense it. I could almost feel his presence on the other side of the door. Each second was drawn out, and every distant shuffle felt like it was right next to me. And then, just as suddenly as the shouting had started, there was a loud banging on the door. I stifled a scream, covering my mouth with both hands. There was a voice, low and growling, asking who was in the closet. It sounded angry and threatening. I didn't dare make a sound, hoping he'd move on. But then, he tried the handle. Thankfully, the closet had a bolt lock, and I had instinctively locked it when I entered. It rattled but held firm. After what felt like an eternity, the banging stopped, and the footsteps began to recede. But I didn't move. I couldn't. I was paralyzed with fear, hoping that the ordeal was over. Finally, after what felt like hours, the lockdown siren ceased. There was an announcement over the intercom that the threat had been neutralized and the lockdown was over. The local police had managed to apprehend the man. I stepped out from that janitor's closet, shaken to my core. That day, the entire school united, offering support to each other. And I realized that despite the horrifying experience, there was a strong sense of community. I decided to stick with teaching, knowing that I was part of something bigger than myself. During my junior year, right after biology class ended, my teacher approached me. She held a box full of microscope slides. She asked me to bring it down to the school basement and handed me an excuse note in case I was late for my next class. I remembered reading a horror novel about a similar basement when I was younger, and I chided myself for letting my imagination run wild. Honestly, I wasn't thrilled. Most of us avoided the basement because it gave off these creepy vibes. I left the classroom and the hallway was its usual madness. Kids were rushing to their next class. Some were chatting about their day. Others were struggling with their lockers. Everywhere, you could hear laughter, groans about homework, and the slamming of locker doors. It was weird thinking how I was heading from this lively scene to the super quiet basement. Walking down, the noises from the hallway faded with every step and were replaced by this cold, silent atmosphere. Once I was all the way down, the only sound was this distant hum, probably some ancient machinery or something. The basement had very dim lighting. Along the walls, there were these tall shelves stuffed with old books and school stuff. Random things were scattered around, like busted chairs and old projectors. I was trying to remember where the teacher had said to put the slides, when suddenly, I heard a bunch of running footsteps. And I'm not talking about a few kids running to class. This was like a lot of kids running fast. It freaked me out instantly. Before I could even react, the door to the basement swung open hard. This younger-looking dude, probably a sophomore, dashed in, looking scared out of his mind. He didn't even look at me. He just hid behind some shelves. And then, a few seconds later, the terrifying, deafening sounds of gunshots could be heard going off in the hallway near the flight of steps leading to the basement. Every drill we had practiced flashed before my eyes. Hide, stay silent, and don't react unless you're certain it's the police. My heart was beating so fast it felt like it was going to explode. Right after that, the school's PA system came on. Someone was saying there was a lockdown, warning about an armed person in the school. This was real. My younger sister Emily had also recently started at this school. As the gunshots echoed, all I could think about was where was she and if she was safe. Then I heard another set of footsteps, but these weren't like the panic steps from the dude who ran down to the basement. They were slow, heavy, and menacing. My brain immediately jumped to the conclusion that the shooter was the one coming down the steps. I was trying to figure out what to do. Should I run or stay hidden? The intruder was too close, so moving felt dangerous. I chose to hide, hoping the old cabinets would keep me out of sight. The basement had lots of hiding places. I hoped the intruder didn't know the place well. I heard the sophomore student whimpering earlier, but now he was quiet. I thought he might have found a better place to hide. Then, my phone buzzed. We'd been told in countless drills to silence our phones, but in the shock of it all, I'd forgotten. The screen showed a call from my mom, which I found odd because she knew we were not supposed to be on our phones during school hours. I quickly hung up, but the buzz had given me away. The noise made the intruder stop. Then, I heard his steps coming my way. I was scared and tried to hide even better behind the cabinets. From where I was, I could see his shadow getting bigger as he got closer. The basement's single light made the shadow look even scarier. Suddenly, I heard sirens from outside, and soon after, the sound of heavy boots. I felt a bit of hope, thinking it might be the police. The intruder seemed to notice too. He stopped for a bit, then, based on the sounds, it seemed like he moved further into the basement, trapping himself. I peeked out a little and saw the sophomore student also hiding nearby. We looked at each other, silently agreeing to stay hidden. The sound of the marching boots got louder, and soon I could hear the police talking near the basement door. I gestured to the other student to remain quiet, even though the sound of help was just around the corner. The intruder tried to hide better. He ended up behind some old furniture but still held on to his weapon. The voices of the police got closer. They shouted out to anyone in the basement, but the student and I stayed silent, not wanting to get in the way or get hurt. Soon, police were in the basement and slowly creeping their way towards where the intruder was hiding. They began commanding him to drop his weapon. After a tense silence, I heard the sound of a gun falling. The police acted quickly, grabbing the intruder and checking if we were okay. They led us out of the basement. When we got out, the scene was something that has scarred me for life. I won't describe what I saw, since it was a scene that should never be uttered. I saw other students looking terrified and crying. The police were everywhere, making sure everything was safe and tending to as many students and staff as possible. My teacher saw me and came over quickly, looking super relieved and worried. She gave me a big hug and said she was so glad I was okay. Everyone was really shaken up by what happened. The basement, which used to just be a bit spooky, now felt like the pits of hell itself. My life has never been the same since that day. School was my happy place. It was where I hung out with friends, joked around, and yeah, did a lot of homework. But one day, during senior year, everything got turned upside down. It began like any normal day. The bell rang, signaling school was over, and I was ready for cheerleading practice. Even after school, the place was buzzing. Some kids were in the auditorium for drama club. The basketball team was in the gym, and some were still in the library doing work. Even after classes, our school was always alive with sounds. Me and my squad were practicing our routines on the field. We were laughing, cheering, and just doing our thing. As it started to get dark, we headed back in. I could hear the school band playing somewhere and other students chatting in the halls. We were talking and laughing in the locker room, just like always. But then, we heard a loud noise. At first, I thought maybe someone dropped something or was messing around in the gym. But then, it happened again. And again. It didn't sound like something falling. The whole vibe in the room changed. Suddenly, it felt like everything was wrong. That's when it hit me. Those sounds. They were gunshots. Everyone freaked out. We were all scrambling, shoes half on, leaving our stuff everywhere. We needed to get out of sight. Some of my friends darted for the back door. Others tried to jam themselves in a closet. Everything felt like a blur. That's when I got an idea. I'm one of the smallest on the team, and I thought maybe I could fit in a locker. Without really thinking, I jumped into one, closing it shut. I was still able to see somewhat through the thin vents of the door. Inside, everything felt so far away. But then, the school alarm started blaring. The main lights shut off, replaced by those dim emergency ones. My heart was beating so fast, I thought it might give me away. Then, more gunshots. This time, they sounded closer. I saw people rushing by the door of the locker room. Some yelling, others just looked scared. And then, everything went super quiet. I mean, the type of quiet where you're hyper aware of every little noise. In that silence, my worst nightmare happened. I heard steps. The person causing all this chaos was now right there in the locker room. I couldn't stop thinking about what was happening. I was so scared. Every time the intruder took a step, I felt like my heart would jump out of my chest. All I could think about was family dinners, doing school stuff, and hanging out with friends. Would I ever do any of that again? I was the only one hiding in a locker. The locker beside mine was quiet. I remembered how scared my friends looked when we all ran to hide. I wondered why no one else hid in a locker like I did. Was it a bad hiding spot, or did they just not think of it? The room felt hot and stuffy. I had a hard time breathing. Everything felt heavy. Every sound seemed so loud, like whispers and even someone trying not to cry. From where I was, I heard the intruder. It sounded like he knew people were still hiding. I quickly covered my mouth, trying to make sure I didn't make any sound. Every minute felt like an hour. I kept thinking about everything. Like, would the football game still happen tonight? Was today the day everything changed for us? Then, I heard sirens from far away. That gave me some hope. It also sounded like the intruder wasn't so sure of himself anymore. When I heard sirens in the distance, the guy in the room seemed to freak out a bit. His footsteps, which were once loud and confident, became quick and messy. It was like he realized he was trapped. Being inside the locker, I felt like I could hear everything, every tiny sound. Soon after the sirens, I heard the sound of a helicopter. It started off faint, but got louder and louder. It hit me then that this wasn't just a couple of police cars showing up. This was big. All of a sudden, there were a lot of noises in the locker room. The guy seemed to be running around, opening and closing drawers like he was looking for something to use. Then, a whole new sound got my attention. It was the sound of many footsteps, and they were coming fast. It wasn't random running, it was organized, like a group moving in together. The helicopter sound was now super loud, almost right above us. I felt so tense, like something big was about to happen. With all the noise, I could barely hear my own heart racing. The next few moments felt like they were out of a movie. I could feel the tension in the room. I pictured the guy with his gun out, staring down a bunch of SWAT guys. Then, someone shouted for him to put his gun down. The voice was so serious and loud. But instead of giving up, there was a gunshot. I jumped. Then, a bunch of other shots followed. It was all so loud and scary. The smell in the room changed, and I could tell it was from the guns. After all that chaos, the helicopter seemed to have moved a bit further away, and everything went quiet inside the room. It was so silent, I was scared to even breathe. I just waited, wondering what had happened. Then, someone called out, "Is anyone in here?" It was commanding, but also worried. The SWAT guys were in charge now. Taking a deep breath, I slowly opened the locker, using the emergency latch on the inside, and announced that I was stepping out. My voice was shaky, but I managed to get the words out. Stepping out of the locker had felt like finally coming up for air after holding my breath for so long. The dim emergency lights had made it hard to see clearly, but I had been able to make out the mess from the struggle. Empty bullet shells on the floor, stuff thrown everywhere, and the guy who had caused all this, now surrounded by SWAT officers. An officer had come up to me, his patch read Captain. Even though he looked tough, his voice had been gentle when he spoke to me. He had asked if I was okay, sounding really worried. I had nodded, finding it hard to speak. I was just trying to take in everything. He had given a small nod, signaling for someone to come check on me. They looked like a medic or something. While they were checking me out, the captain had been talking to his team, making sure everything was okay. They seemed so organized, especially after everything that had just happened. I also saw several of my friends who had come out of hiding, which was a huge relief for me. Over the loudspeaker, someone had said everything was safe now, but told us to stay where we were until it was okay to move. Hearing that had helped a bit, but it hadn't made what happened just go away. More cops had come in, some looking at stuff on the ground, others just talking. I hadn't been able to really tell why the guy did what he did, but I guess they'd find out. Outside, there had been so much noise. Besides the sirens, there had been lots of voices. They must have been worried parents, reporters, and other people trying to see what happened. I could still remember the sound of the helicopter flying around. When they let me leave the school, everything had felt so heavy. People had been hugging, crying, and trying to comfort each other. Even though that day was the worst, seeing everyone together had given me some hope. The sun had been setting outside, and it had looked so different after what happened. That day had changed everything for me. But seeing how everyone had supported each other, I felt that maybe, just maybe, we could get through this together.
I remember that day like it was yesterday, even though it's been 7 years. It was a bright morning, and the high school grounds buzzed with the usual chatter of teenagers. I had just started my shift as a school security guard, a job I took up after serving 2 tours in Afghanistan. The transition from a war zone to a high school might seem odd to some, but for me, it was a way to protect, to serve in a different capacity. I had seen enough violence and wanted to be somewhere I could make a difference without the constant threat of gunfire. My buddies used to joke that I traded dodging bullets overseas for dodging flying spitballs in the hallways, but I didn't mind. The school became my refuge, a place where I could leave behind the memories of war and focus on the present. I had a routine: check the doors, patrol the hallways, and keep an eye on the cameras. It was straightforward work, but it gave me a sense of purpose. I had heard stories of other vets struggling to adjust to civilian life, some of them battling demons far worse than any enemy on the battlefield. I considered myself lucky. The nightmares had stopped, and I had found a place where I felt I belonged. That morning, as I was making my rounds, I noticed one of the back doors was slightly open. It was odd because I had checked it not too long before. My stomach tightened with an anxiety I hadn't felt since my time in the military. I told myself it was probably just a teacher or a janitor who'd forgotten to close it properly. But as I approached the door, that old instinct, the one that had kept me alive in the war, kicked in. Something wasn't right here. I quickly secured the door, ensuring it was locked tight. At that moment, my adrenaline started pumping, and I broke out into a sweat. I decided to review the security footage to see who had left the door open. The security room was just down the hall, a small space filled with monitors displaying feeds from cameras placed all over the school. After making my way there, I started rewinding the footage. I saw a figure entering the school. The man was dressed in civilian clothes, but his posture, the way he moved, screamed military. I knew that walk, that alertness. It was like seeing a ghost from my past. However, the most alarming detail was the unmistakable outline of a gun in his hand. The school's PA system crackled to life, and the principal's voice echoed through the hallways, announcing a lockdown. I couldn't see the students from where I was, but I knew the drill. They'd be ushered into classrooms, doors locked, lights off, huddled in corners. At that moment, I knew this was the real deal, and I had to do whatever was necessary to keep everyone safe. I was the first line of defense, and with an armed intruder on the premises, the stakes had never been higher. I stepped out of the security room, making sure to stay hidden in the less lit areas. The quiet made even small sounds noticeable. The fluorescent lights, the heater in the background, and my own movement. As I turned a corner, I caught a glimpse of the intruder. He was talking to himself, his voice a low murmur, all the while tightly holding on to the gun. From the way he moved and the things he muttered, it seemed like he thought he was still in Afghanistan, treating the school as if it was an enemy stronghold. His actions and words hinted at the grip of PTSD, forcing him into a flashback of a situation I never wanted to relive. The PA system was in the main office, a few hallways away. I figured if I could get there, I might be able to communicate with him. Using the intercom might be a risk, especially with him being armed, but it was one I was willing to take. If I could just reach him, remind him of home, maybe I could bring him back to reality. I made my way to the office, avoiding the main hallways, using side doors and maintenance corridors. Once inside, I grabbed a microphone, took a deep breath, and began to speak. I talked about our shared experiences, the places we might have been, the sounds and smells of Afghanistan. I didn't know if he could hear me, but I hope my voice, a fellow soldier's voice, might pierce through his haze. The school's lockdown system had automatically notified the police, but I knew it would take them some time to arrive. Every second counted. It felt like the weight of the world was on my shoulders, but I held on to hope. Hope that my words could make a difference. Hope that this day wouldn't end in tragedy. After I tried the PA system, I waited for a response, but the silence from the other end was unsettling. I turned to the security monitors in the main office. On one of the screens, I spotted the intruder pacing back and forth in the gym. His agitated movements indicated he was still deeply engrossed in his own world. I figured the intercom wasn't cutting it. I needed to get closer, to really reach him. So, I left the main office and headed towards the gym. The hallways felt longer than usual, and the silence was deafening. The closer I got to the gym, the clearer his voice became. I approached the gym's double doors, which were slightly open. Through the gap, I saw him. He was pacing, gun in hand, talking to himself. It was clear he was lost in some memory from the war. I took a deep breath and pushed the door wider. It creaked, and he turned sharply, pointing the gun in my direction. We locked eyes. There wasn't recognition of knowing each other, but there was a shared understanding. We were both soldiers, shaped by the same war. I slowly raised my hands, showing I wasn't a threat. He kept a gun trained on me, but I could see the confusion in his eyes. He was trying to piece together where he was and who I was. I started talking, telling him about my time in Afghanistan, the places I'd been, the things I'd seen. I hoped something familiar would snap him back to the present. As I talked, I saw small changes in him. The grip on his gun loosened a bit. His stance became less aggressive. He started responding, sharing bits and pieces of his own experiences. It was clear he was struggling, caught between the horrors of the past and the reality of the present. We talked, we shared, and slowly the gym transformed from a battlefield back to a school. His guard dropped, and the gun eventually found its way to the floor. He looked exhausted, drained, like a weight had been lifted off of him. Outside, I finally heard the sirens growing louder and the distant thumping of a helicopter's blades. Recognizing the urgency, I spoke to the intruder, tapping into our shared military background, reminding him of the protocols and the importance of following a chain of command. Slowly, he seemed to understand, and with a nod, I gestured for him to follow me to the main office. Once there, I quickly picked up the office landline, dialing the direct emergency number provided to us for situations like this, and informed the police of our location and the intruder's state. By the time we settled in, the school was surrounded, and the police were ready, approaching with caution and understanding. Once the police entered the school, they handled the situation with care, understanding the intruder's mental state. They ensured he would receive the necessary help rather than treating him as a mere threat. In the aftermath, the school community rallied together, taking steps to ensure such an incident wouldn't happen again. We bolstered our security measures, ran more frequent drills, and of course, fixed that back door with a new lock and an alarm system. Yet, even with these measures in place, an underlying tension persisted among the staff. Every day, as I walked the hallways, I remembered the importance of being vigilant, no matter how ordinary the day might appear. The weight of a life is something you can't truly understand until it's on your shoulders. Just a year ago, I was a star player of my high school's football team. My name's Scott, and I was the guy everyone cheered for, the one who made the winning touchdowns, the one who was destined for college scholarships. But all that changed during a game against our fiercest rivals. I tackled an opponent, a move I'd done 100 times before, but this time, the boy didn't get up. The doctors later said it was commotio cordis, a rare heart disturbance caused by a blow to the chest. I didn't need the medical jargon. All I knew was that I'd unintentionally taken a life on the field. Life after that incident was a haze. I would walk through the school halls and hear other students whispering things, making it obvious it was about me. Then, rumors started making their way around the school. Some said it was an accident. Others blamed me, and a few even called it murder. My friends tried to be supportive, but I could tell they didn't feel so comfortable around me anymore. Football, which once was my escape, became a recurring nightmare of that day. I quit the team, and my dreams of college scholarships faded away. Everywhere I went, memories of that day followed, making it hard to be who I once was. One day, right in the middle of math, the school's alarm started blaring out of nowhere. We'd had drills before, but something about this felt different. The teacher's face went pale, and without a word, she motioned for us to follow her. We were led to a storage room, a place I'd never been before. There wasn't much light, and the room had that old book and dust smell. As the door shut behind us, the gravity of the situation began to dawn on me. This wasn't a drill. This was real. The storage room was cramped and stuffy. There was one dim light overhead, and it barely lit up the place. We were about 10 people in there, all trying to find a spot to sit or stand without bumping into each other. Stacy, who I knew from English class, was there, looking terrified. Brett, who used to be on the football team with me, was also there. He was trying to act tough, but I could tell he was freaked out. We were all on pins and needles, getting startled by the tiniest of noises. It felt like we were all waiting for something bad to happen. I had no idea how long we were in there. We didn't have our phones, and there was no clock. We just sat and waited. Then, out of nowhere, I heard a man's voice. He was shouting my name. It sounded angry and sad at the same time. I felt sick. I didn't know the voice, but I had a bad feeling about why he was there. It had to be about that game. Brett leaned over and told me he'd heard stories about the dad of the kid from the game. People said he went kind of crazy after his son died. They said he blamed me. Everything started to make sense. The alarms, being stuck in this room, that voice. This guy was here for me, and he sounded really pissed off. The noise outside got louder. I could hear footsteps and stuff getting knocked over. Every time the man shouted my name, I felt like I was going to throw up. We all looked at each other, not knowing what to do. We were stuck in this room, and it felt like there was no way out. I thought about the game, the kid, and now this. Everything was going wrong, and I didn't know how to make it stop. The footsteps grew louder, and it was clear the man was getting closer to our hiding spot. Every thud of his heavy boots made it harder to hold myself together. I could hear him trying doors, some of them locked, others giving way with a loud crash. The room was so silent, you could hear a pin drop. Each of us holding our breath, praying he'd pass us by. But deep down, I had this sinking feeling that he wouldn't. Suddenly, the handle on our door jiggled. Every single one of us flinched. The door was locked, but that didn't seem to stop him. There was a moment of silence, then a loud bang as he threw his weight against it. The door shuddered, but held firm. The metal frame echoed with the impact, but it didn't give. I could hear him panting on the other side, his breath ragged with frustration and anger. Then, Brett started motioning for us to stack whatever we could against the door. We scrambled, pushing old desks, chairs, and boxes, creating a makeshift barricade. The room was a mess of movement as everyone tried to do their part, driven by sheer adrenaline. Another crash against the door, followed by the sound of the handle being violently twisted and jolted. Stacy, her eyes filled with tears, clutched a sharp piece of broken metal she'd found, ready to defend herself. Others looked for anything they could use as a weapon, preparing for the worst. The situation outside the door went from bad to worse real quick. The guy was hammering on the door like a madman, and he kept shouting my name, louder and angrier each time. The sound of metal scraping against the door made us realize he was using a crowbar, trying to pry his way in. We all pressed ourselves against the walls, trying to stay as far from the door as possible. The room was filled with the sounds of our heavy breathing and the guy's relentless yelling and attempts to break in. Then, in the midst of the chaos, we started hearing other voices. It was the cops. They were shouting at him, telling him to drop the crowbar and step away. The sirens outside got louder, and it was clear that a bunch of police cars had shown up. The shouting and prying felt endless, but in reality, it might have lasted only a short while before it all stopped. We heard the unmistakable sound of metal clanging on the floor, followed by the guy breaking down and crying. The danger was over, but the memories of that day were going to stick with me for a long time. The day after the incident, school felt different. Everyone was talking about what happened,
and I couldn't escape the whispers or stares. I was the center of the story, but not in a way anyone would want. Arriving at the school each morning made it real hard to try and block what happened out of my head. The football game, the lockdown, that man's voice, it all stuck with me. Even with the guy gone and the immediate danger over, the feeling of being trapped, of being hunted, never really left me. I was always told that our past shapes us, but I never imagined that a single day from my childhood would cast such a long shadow over my life. I'm Candace, now a 21-year-old woman, but the memories of that day in fourth grade are as vivid as if they had happened yesterday. Growing up, my home was never the safe space it should have been. My father's alcoholism made our lives a living hell, with my mother bearing the brunt of his anger. She was my rock, shielding me from the worst of it, but the scars, both emotional and physical, were undeniable. My parents' rocky relationship was no secret. Neighbors would often hear the loud arguments and the shattering of glass. My mom tried to keep me away from it all, enrolling me in after-school activities and sending me to sleepovers whenever things got too heated at home. But the walls of our small house were thin, and I'd often lie in bed, clutching my teddy bear, listening to the muffled cries and praying for morning. The day it all came to a head started like any other. I remember the sun shining brightly, the laughter of my friends, and the anticipation of a spelling test. But as the day wore on, an odd feeling settled in my stomach, a premonition that something was about to go terribly wrong. Lunch was usually my time to relax, a break from the books, and a chance to chat with friends. But that day, as I was grabbing my tray, I overheard two teachers talking in low voices. They mentioned my dad's name, and my heart immediately started racing. I tried to brush it off, thinking maybe they were discussing something else, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. I barely had time to sit down and start eating when the school's loudspeaker buzzed to life. The principal's voice, usually so calm, sounded tense as he announced a sudden lockdown. Everyone in the cafeteria froze. Then, teachers began hurrying students out of the open space, directing us to the nearest classrooms. I ended up in Mrs. Henderson's room. She quickly locked the door, pulled down the blinds, and told us to stay quiet and away from the windows. The dimness of the room only added to the heavy feeling of anxiety. All I could hear were the muffled sounds of my classmates trying to hold back tears and the distant, angry shouts echoing throughout the hallways. It was unmistakably my dad's voice, and every so often, a chilling clang of metal would follow. The realization hit me hard. He was here, at my school, and he was looking for me. The anticipation was unbearable, with moments dragging on endlessly. I could hear other kids sniffling and trying to stay quiet. The loudest thing was the sound of my dad's voice getting closer. He was yelling and smashing things with, what I later learned, was a metal baseball bat. I kept thinking about how he shouldn't be here and how he needed to leave. I pressed myself against the wall, hoping he wouldn't think to look in Mrs. Henderson's room. Then, all of a sudden, there was this huge bang right outside our door. Everyone jumped. The door handle was being yanked and twisted hard. Mrs. Henderson looked scared, but she kept signaling for us to stay quiet and move further away from the door. Every time the bat hit the door, I thought it was going to break open. I could hear him shouting my name, and it felt like a nightmare. I wanted to wake up and for everything to be normal again. But then, things changed. Footsteps approached, but they weren't my dad's heavy, drunken steps. They were more deliberate, authoritative. I heard muffled voices, one of which I recognized as a school security guard, Mr. Garcia. The tension in the room shifted slightly, replaced by a cautious hope. The threat wasn't gone, but there was a hint that we weren't alone anymore. After some time, the intercom buzzed, but it wasn't at all clear. Instead, the principal's voice, trying to sound calm, told us to remain in our classrooms until further notice. Peeking out from a small window in the door, I saw police officers moving swiftly through the hallways. Mrs. Henderson kept us calm, telling us to stay put and assuring us that everything would be okay. Hours seemed to pass before the intercom came to life again. This time, the principal announced that the situation was resolved and that our parents were being contacted to pick us up from school. As we were escorted out of the building by school staff, I caught a glimpse of the aftermath in the hallway. The dented lockers, scattered papers, and the heavy presence of police painted a scary scene I'd never forget. I didn't see my dad as we left, but I heard from others that he'd been taken away in a police car. When we were finally allowed to leave the school, I saw my mom waiting outside. Her face was a mix of relief and worry. She hugged me tight, tighter than she ever had before, and we didn't say much on the drive home. The house felt different after that day. My dad's absence was like a void, but in a strange way, it was also a relief. We didn't have to walk on eggshells anymore, fearing his unpredictable moods. Nights were quieter, and slowly, we started rebuilding our lives. It wasn't easy, but with time, our home became the safe haven it was always meant to be.